Hello, and welcome to the Reach or Miss Show, the podcast for the customer-focused entrepreneur, where Hayut Yogev speaks with entrepreneurs for entrepreneurs about reaching or missing the critical point of approaching the right customer with the right message at the right time and place. The point where business success starts. And here is your host, Hayut Yogev.
Reach or Miss, episode 61. Lance Schuller, the Savvy Navigator, has been involved in international trade and transport for 50 years. In 2008, Lance started receiving invitations from students in his export and import classes to connect with them on both Facebook and LinkedIn. Over the last 9 years, he has developed and expanded his social media networks exponentially, especially LinkedIn, Twitter, YouTube, Snapchat, and BB, and those of a selected group of clients in a variety of sectors, both locally and globally. The results have been significant. Lance is now in the process of doing a 180-degree business pivot, refocusing away from social media consulting back to what he does best, international trade and transport training. He is soon to launch an online course, Import-Export Made Easy, in video and audio, as well as the Import-Export Made Easy podcast. Lance Schuller, how are you? Hi.
Hi ho, hi. Welcome from Sydney, Australia, the land down under.
It's so great. I'm so happy you're here. I've waited to this conversation so long. So great to have you here. Hi.
Thank you. Hi.
I just shared with our listeners what you've done until now, and I would like to ask you to share with us, what are you doing and most passionate about today, and where are you heading?
So how I started in business, back in the early 1970s, and you can see how old I am, a friend of mine had been working at an Indian university as a solid-state physicist. And he challenged a group of us at our church to consider using our skills or professions to assist people in developing countries. Now, at the time, I was working as the shipping supervisor for what is now known as Baxter International.
Okay.
Baxter is a healthcare company headquartered in Illinois, the USA, but they're a multinational company, and I was working for their Australian division.
Okay.
So in 1976, I completed a four-year management course at TAFE, which is Technical and Further Education College, and I also passed my exams for the Australian Customs Broker's license with the Australian Customs Service, the government agency. So I took 2 weeks' holiday from the company to door knock businesses in my local area to see if I could find people interested in my service as a customs broker. And obviously, they needed to be either importing or exporting or doing both. So the result after that 2 weeks was that I gained a number of clients, and on the strength of that, I decided to resign from Baxter and set up my own customs and forwarding broker.
Oh, and that was when?
1976.
Wow, it's a brave act, isn't it?
Well, it was, yeah. And so my marketing back then was a lot of door knocking, just going around to companies that looked as though they might be involved in importing and exporting in my local area, which is on the north shore of Sydney. So north of the Harbour Bridge, looking north from the Sydney Opera House on the other side of the harbour, going up to north. My home was at Hornsby, which is right at the top of the north shore. And so I did a lot of door knocking, and I got a number of clients that way. I also used direct mail back, this is before internet, obviously, in the 70s. And one of those was actually in Australia Post, our national postal service. You could address a mail to the post office.
Yeah.
All the different towns up from Sydney, from North Sydney up to Hornsby, I did a standard letter offering them a free service to try me out. So I tried that as direct mail. I did telemarketing back in the days. I did it myself.
Yeah.
I just got the yellow pages out and looked for categories that would be likely to have importers and exporters in it. So I just went down the yellow pages, found people in my area that were in that, and rang them. then the next area was, once I got clients using my services, I would ask them for referrals to other businesses they might know.
Sure.
So that was sort of my marketing strategy back in those days.
I guess I suddenly thought of that. Exporting and importing, while we're talking about Australia, is a big deal, isn't that? It's so far.
Well, it is. It's the largest island in the world, but the smallest continent. We're an island continent. We're fairly unique in that respect. But we are pretty much removed from most parts of the world. It was set up as a colony of Britain back in the 1780s. A lot of our international income came from the sale of wheat and wool from sheep. So we were an agricultural country in the early, well, particularly even in the early 20th century. But then we got into manufacturing in, you know, the 50s and 60s. And yeah, so import-export is a very big issue in Australia because we get things from overseas and we also export things to overseas.
Let's jump to today. What is going today? What are you doing today?
Well, what I'm doing today, I'm pivoting. Back in 2009, I got very involved in social media marketing. I might talk about that a bit later. We'll see how we go. But I got very involved in that. I have been running a course on importing and exporting since 97. But I was getting invitations from some of my students at my import-export course, inviting me to connect with them. This was in 2008, to connect with them on either Facebook or LinkedIn. And at the early stages of that, I thought, what is this? I don't really want to know about that. And then I Googled how to use Facebook and how to use LinkedIn for business. I wasn't not interested in just socially connecting with people. It had to be a business result from it. Once I Googled that and I found, I should get into this. So since then, I really I could see the potential, particularly as we just mentioned, Australia is fairly isolated from the rest of the world. And the internet has changed that because, and social media in particular. Well, let me tell you a story that in early January 2009, I found a guy on Twitter, and I'd only been using Twitter effectively for a week or so. And this guy was in Romania. I think his name was Torful from memory. And he'd only been on Twitter a short time too, by the looks of it, as I had. But his latest tweet was, I'm looking for a copywriter for a job. So I sent him a direct message on Twitter saying, what's the job? And he came back and says, I need a bio for a blog. And I went back to him and said, look, I do my, bios and things for myself now, but I'm not a copywriter. So I just went out onto Twitter, said, colleague on Twitter needs copywriter for a job. And I just put that out there. Now, interestingly enough, I just realized you're in Israel. I had this lady contact me from Israel. I forget her name. Let's call Irene. Irene from Israel says, I'm a copywriter. What's the job? Remember, Twitter's changed now, but for up till recently, it was 140 characters or less. So she did that. And I explained it to her on Twitter. Then I put her in touch with Torful in Romania. And about a week later, Torful comes back to me on Twitter and says, job's done. Thanks very much.
Wow.
And I thought, wow. So I went back on Twitter to Irene in Israel and said, Torful tells me job's done. Everything okay? Question mark. And the extremely long answer was, yup. Thanks. Now, this might seem insignificant to you or your listeners, but to me in Australia, isolated, if you wanted to send communications, you know, telexes and faxes were sort of just coming in. Well, had been in for a while. But to be able to connect with two people in Romania and Israel and basically broker a deal, not that I got paid for it, but this was an aha moment for me.
Sure.
I thought, aha, this is big. This, I could see the potential of this from a networking, from an international trade perspective of dealing with countries around the world. This was huge.
Sure. And how did you use that for your...
So I was actually at that stage, I'd been in business myself. I'd worked for a few other companies. This was 2009, as I said, it was January. By May, I thought, I'd been pursuing how could I use this new technology, social media, to move things. And by June, I decided I would resign and go into this full time, helping small business use social media to promote their business. So I left there and basically started up helping people with social media.
Without any connection to export and import?
Not necessarily, no, because virtually I could see every business, every small business in particular, could use social media to promote their business.
Sure.
I was still running my courses, but I have to say those courses, which were face-to-face, they were two-day courses, and I did them on Saturdays because when I was back in 1997, I started running training courses for the Australian Federation of International Forwarders. They're the people that move goods in and out of the country on ships and planes in Australia. We're surrounded by sea. We don't have any land borders with anyone. So about 2015-16, a lot of people weren't coming to these courses, not just my course, but courses in general. People were going online. So my course numbers dropped. And so actually part of when you first approached me, I was thinking about doing this video course online, but the more I talked to others about it and a few conversations that you and I had over the last month or two, or few months really, I realized that I was letting people down that could be doing my course because I wasn't taking it globally. And because I wasn't doing that course, a lot of people would make some big mistakes and lose a lot of money and probably go out of business.
That's correct. That's exactly the point.
So I, in a sense, and it's not the wrong thing, but I got dazzled by the excitement of social media and what it can do for any business. But I also found it was actually a lot of the people that called me up when I suggested things, I would do things for them. But if I left them to their own devices, they didn't do it. So really, I was actually drawn off my niche by the bright, shiny object, if you like, of social media. So what I'm doing, I'm pivoting back, you know, what is my target audience? And it's a global audience this time. It's not just local in my, you know, area around Sydney and New South Wales in Australia. I can provide it everywhere. The advantage that I've done with all that I've done in building networks on Twitter and LinkedIn in particular is that I've got a global network now. Huge following on Twitter and substantial on LinkedIn. So I've got connections virtually every or most countries of the world. So I'm now going to use that social networking that I've achieved to then promote my course. Let's see what happens.
I believe in online courses. I just started to join this as well. And I just released my first 3-mini online course. And then there is a whole course that I already built. So I am a great believer, and I myself used several courses and paid for several very good experts to take their course. And, you know, it's a much easier way to really jump like a year or two and suddenly recruit a new ability, suddenly be able to podcast. And I used the course for that, of course, and suddenly be able to make webinars or make an online course, which I paid for a course to study that. So it's very interesting. You know, we talk to entrepreneurs. Most of our listeners are entrepreneurs and startup founders and also small business owners. And I would like to ask you, what is your best advice regarding, you know, approaching your customers, approaching on customer focus to entrepreneurs and startup founders? What would be your best advice for them?
Okay, I'm going to give you two perspectives, and this partly comes back from my early days when I had clients who are customers.
Yeah.
But I guess the definition of a customer is someone who buys goods or services from a store or a business. And back in the 70s, that was physical things.
Yeah.
But now you can sell online those physical things. We've just had Amazon set up in Australia for Fulfilled by Amazon. So people can actually provide their products on Amazon website in Australia and have it delivered by Amazon.
Yeah.
So there's lots of courses springing up in Australia, but also overseas, I've noticed, saying how you can do that. And part of it a lot of these people are saying, you know, find something in China, have it made in China if you can organise that and then import it, whether it's into Australia or the USA or Ireland or Europe. Of course, Amazon is opening up in, I think it's about 13 countries that has this service now.
Yeah.
So that's the customer. But in my early days, they were clients. Now, I came across a guy, I think it was the early 2000s, a guy named Sean D'Souza.
Yeah.
He's a marketing strategist, and he had a book called The Brain Audit.
Okay.
And in that book, he talked about the concept of a client in relation to the ancient Roman culture. The patronus or patron was the protector, the sponsor, or the benefactor of the client. And he then relates to Webster's Dictionary, which says if you're a service provider, the client is someone you should care for, someone who comes under your protection, or someone you should guide. So the concept of care, protection, and guidance should be for people that provide services as consultants, or in my case, as a customs broker, then we're there to give care, protection, and guidance to our clients.
I love that.
So that's my clients, those, you know, those years for 13, 15 years or so, were people that regularly would come to me, I've got something I'm importing, can you handle it for me? Or I've got something to export, can you handle it for me? But now I'm going back, as I've just said, my clients are going to be watching a video series. I'm going to open a podcast similar to what you're doing.
That's great.
They won't be clients so much, although some may become clients, but they're customers in the true sense. I'm just providing a product, in this case a digital service, that they can view.
Sure.
But I still have that concept in what I'm doing. It's to help care for themselves in importing and exporting, protect them from the bad stuff, and give guidance how to make a profit. So that's my take on it. Now, that's for me, I guess, to any business startup entrepreneur, it's really finding out. It depends on what they're selling. If it's a product, if it's a product that's just sold in the local area, or you're providing a service in the local area. A lot of it could be door knocking still, although door knocking is not such a viable alternative these days.
Yeah.
But also providing good content about what the product can do or the service that you provide can do, using social media to get that content out so people become aware of you, and providing good value to those people. That's the sort of things that I try and do.
That's great. So care, protect, and guide your customers. I think that's the main thing behind your advice, isn't that?
Yeah, that's for sure.
I love that. I would like to ask you, it doesn't matter whether it was during the old days or today, or because I believe, like you said, just said, that a customer is a customer. And I would like to ask you, what was your biggest, most critical failure with customers? The one that affected your career or business or entrepreneurial journey the most, or one of them?
Yeah, well, I've had quite a number of them. as I've listened to a lot of your the people who've come on your program, most of us have a number of failures, if not many of them. But one that comes to mind.
Yeah, I think the successful people has a lot of failures as well. It's the only way to succeed, isn't that?
I think so. I think it's a learning situation. It's the, instead of going to a uni, I never went to university, but it's the University of Hard Knocks. Trial and error. So, look, I'm going to share something. It's a bit hard for me in one sense. I have shared it with a few times, and I've actually explained with a bit of a backstory what happened. Back in 2007 and 2008, I was running my own course at Sydney Community College as well as others, but I was also asked to be a guest presenter at the Sydney Community College, two courses for young entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
One was called Go Start Up Biz, was for people that were thinking about starting up a business, and they could attend that to get good advice on, you know, what to do. And the second one was Go Young Biz. It was basically people in business, young people in business, to improve what they were doing. And so I spoke at both of these things, and I would often talk about import-export, but also many other things from my own experience. So on one particular night, the group that I was with, they were sharing their business story so far, and the facilitator, Jackie Williamson, ask what I would like to share with this young, enthusiastic group. Now, though some of them were doing amazing things, and I didn't want to take away from it, but, Hayat, I think today, if you would agree, but the term entrepreneur is often put on a pedestal, and shows like the Shark Tank, there's one in the USA, but we have one here in Australia, it often gives the impression that almost anyone can become an entrepreneur. The reality is, though, it's not possible. And if you follow Gary Vaynerchuk at all, Gary V, he's been talking about this for the last year, saying there's people that are committing suicide because they failed and they didn't know how to cope with it. So back in 2008 with this group of people, this is before Gary Vaynerchuk talking about it, I shared with them, and I felt compelled to share with them what I consider the worst day of my life or worst night of my life. And that was a night back in October 1999, and was the night that I realised I had let down my most important client. And you might ask, who was that?
Who was that?
That client was my business partner. But more importantly, that person was Sandy. And Sandy was and still is my wife. And that night, I went up to our bedroom.
Yeah.
And Sandy was sitting on the side of the bed, and she was crying inconsolably. I tried all sorts of things to comfort her, but nothing I could do or say would ease her pain. And that night was the last night in our house that we'd built 26 years previously, and she sobbed at me. I thought I would be taken out of our home in a box. And what she meant by that, a funeral casket. In other words, she figured her whole life would be spent in this house and she would only leave to be buried.
Oh.
What happened is the bank that we used, and at this point of time, I'd gone from my customs broking situation to, in 97, I started a course for the Australian Federation of International Forwarders, a sea freight procedures course, which I took around to the capital cities of Australia. So I did these courses, my import-export courses, on a Saturday because I could be travelling around Australia through the week. Anyway, the bank that we had our overdraft with, they sent me a letter saying, you have to pay up right now. No ifs or buts. You know, this is it. In their contract, they had the right to do that. Now, at the moment, we've got a royal commission. The government has set up a royal commission into the banking and finance industry in Australia. And banks have been doing all sorts of terrible things. And I don't know if my case would have been in that situation, but it doesn't matter. It's happened. So we had to sell our much-loved home. And with two of our three children, one of them was working elsewhere, and two cats and our dog, we had to move in with some good friends of ours who themselves renting at the time.
Oh.
So that was you might call a valley for us. It was a terrible time.
Sure.
And it was basically because I had not paid too much attention to the bank and trying to reduce our overdraft, I guess.
I missed the part of where the customer was there.
Well,
did you talk about yourself as a customer here?
I talked about my wife because she was a partner in my business.
Yeah.
And I wasn't caring and protecting and guiding her correctly. I was too concerned about our clients, and I didn't concern. I'm looking from the point of view, she was my client as my wife.
Yeah, and as your partner, sure. And I think in a way it's taking care of the people that are part of our business life the same as we are taking care of our customers, isn't it?
It is. And in that time we had no employees. In a previous business failure, I had employees and I had to put them off. So what I'm saying to people that are thinking about starting a business and you employ people, you have a duty of care to those people in your business as well as yourself.
Yeah, and I think you're saying also that your responsibility to your family, whether they are partners in your business or not,
exactly,
is probably what will allow you, actually, it's what we are doing the business for, isn't it?
It is. And I think I'd lost sight of that to some extent.
Thank you for sharing that story. It's sad, but I know we have a good end, isn't it? Or a good continuation of the story, isn't that?
Well, it is.
I would like to ask you, what is the biggest success due to something that you did right with your customers? And it's also okay to refer to your employees or to your partners as your customers.
Yes, so As I said, I was actually a trainer for the Australian Federation of International Forwarders. And I was, as I said, I was training. Yeah. So my courses were 3-day courses and I would take them around to the different capital cities. Well, the 5 states of Australia, the mainland 5 states, where the main ports and airports for cargo coming in and out of the country. So in a sense, the freight forwarders that sent their staff to these courses were my clients, although I was employed by AFIF, the Freight Forwarders Federation. So that was October that I just shared with you. The next night, which was possibly, in a sense, one of the better nights of my life, I was enjoying the Christmas party put on by the Federation for trainers and staff. And there's probably only about 15 people there. There's a few trainers, a few head office staff, probably about 5 people. So we had a nice Christmas event at a restaurant and I got up to say goodnight to Brian Lovell, who was the CEO and still is, as far as I'm aware. And I said, thanks very much. You know, thanks for all this year. And he'd been very supportive when this sad event happened. He'd been very supportive of me. Then he said to me, come and see me tomorrow. And I said, why would I want to do that? Because as a trainer, I didn't attend the office per se. And he said, well, I would like to talk to you about GST, the goods and services tax. And I said, why would I want to do that, Brian? Tax and financial things isn't part of my DNA. Even though I've been in business, it's not something that really impresses me. So what was happening, this was 1999, it was December, and on the 1st of July 2000, 6 months away, the then government was going to introduce a new tax system called the Goods and Services Tax, GST. And the government was setting up a fund to train different industry groups so that when it was introduced, they would know, you know, those businesses would know what to do. And so what he asked me to do was, one, to apply to the GST Startup Assistance Office for funding, which meant then I had to put in a proposal of what we would do, who would we apply it to. And the first of all was for our members, freight forwarders, the people that organise the transport in and out of the country for imports and exports. But the lady that I spoke with at the GST Startup Assistance Officer, her name was Gina, I can't remember her last name, but she said, look, can you cast the audience to a wider audience? Those that are not just transporting goods, what about importers and exporters and customs brokers and airlines and shipping lines? So what I did is I then said, okay, I can do that. And I've always been a great believer in collaboration and working with a team of people to do things. So what I did is we'd actually been approached by some people from the tax office in the transport area. Said, we don't know much about international. We know about trucks and taxis in Australia. But we don't know about international trade. So they approached us to get an understanding. I then approached them, would you provide Australian Tax Office speakers to be at our events and co-present with me? And they agreed to do that. So it was great. And then I worked with the Australian Institute of Export, the Australian Federation of Shipping, people that, you know, run ships, Liner Shipping Services. You've probably heard of IATA, the International Air Transport Association.
Sure.
Lots of people, when they book through travel agents, those travel agents are generally members of IATA. Well, the cargo division, in fact, the CEO of the cargo division came to Brian and myself and said, would you come and speak at our monthly meeting about GST? When I arrived there with my projector and my laptop, I thought it was their monthly meeting and GST would be just one little section of their, you know, we'll now have a talk about GST. I said, when do you want me to start my presentation? He said, no, Lance, you are the presentation. Everyone has come here to listen and see what you've got to say about GST. We've got all the airlines coming.
Wow.
And really excitingly, they brought their professional outsource accountants like PricewaterhouseCoopers, KPMG, and I'm not an expert on tax at all. I'm not, you know, not even very good with tax. But what I had done, and what happened, is I gave the presentation, quaking in my boots, sweat pouring off my brow, because I'm thinking, these are, you know, extremely high people from airlines and, you know, big five accounting firms. And I'm just trying to explain in simple terms, in layman terms, this stuff. What happened? A guy from PricewaterhouseCoopers came up to me afterwards. He said, "Lance, that was the simplest explanation of GST I've ever heard, and it makes sense to the ordinary person." So that was a bit of a boost for me.
Sure.
So what it meant is, as and I had people come up to me around Australia saying they'd been to, you know, many of the tax accountants were giving seminars, but they couldn't understand what they're talking about because of all the jargon. I couldn't use the jargon because I didn't know what it was. I had to just explain it in simple, everyday working man's terms. And that
and it worked.
And it worked because people were basically just small business people or even big businesses. They just wanted to know what it meant in nuts, you know, very simple terms so they could then go apply it in their business.
Wow. What was the result that you gained out of that?
That seminar, there was 47 of those in 3 months. I did it from April to June.
Whoa.
And so what I was able to do is, if you think of my clients, in inverted commas, or customers, if you like, were all the people that attended from all sorts of, from farmers to manufacturers to government officials to a whole range of people that I was able to explain in simple terms so that people can understand and then go to their accountants and say, how do we do this? How do we, you know, on the 1st of July, how do we start working in this new scheme that the government has brought in and the tax, the Australian Tax Office is going to implement? How do we do it? And so I felt a great sense of accomplishment that I was able to help those people to understand what they had to do and then go and do it.
And it takes us back to the care, protect, and guide that you just talked about.
Exactly, yeah.
That's beautiful. I would like to ask you, can you recommend the best or most effective technological or digital tool related to customer focus, marketing, or sales that you use? What I'm looking for is not, you know, the shiniest last tool, but one of the tools that is most effective for you regarding having some kind of relationship with your customers.
Okay, so I'm going to give you four.
Oh, that's great.
I use them in conjunction with each other. So, you know, I have a number of Twitter sites, as you know. I'm very active.
And you use them all to protect and care for people that are your colleagues or your Twitter friends, and so great because you are sharing all the time and you are guiding all the time. It's so beautiful.
Yeah, so I use, I found that my smartphone, I have a Samsung S8 smartphone, but I find the app, let's talk just about Twitter at the moment. Twitter, in some respects, is easier to use on the app than on my desktop. Okay. Now, really? The other thing is, I've got five Twitter sites that I actively use on the apps. The great thing, so if people, you know, your listeners are wanting to have more than one Twitter site, they might have their personal one and a business one, then by using the app, you can go from one to the other without having to log out and log in. You can have the on the app, the Twitter app on your smartphone, you can go in and out of, and so you can be posting things.
That's right. That's what I'm doing in the app.
Fantastic. Yes.
So, yeah, I understand exactly what you're talking about.
So there's that. Now, I've been using Social Oomph. That's Social OOMPH. I will give you the links later.
Sure.
But I've been using that since 2009. Now, I've used it in a number of fashions. I'm not going to explain how I've used it in the past, because many of those things don't are not able to be used because Twitter has stopped them. But currently, so up till recently, I could post the same. I could put a bunch of tweets in a text file and post it out to all of those Twitter sites at once. I could randomize it so they're not all saying the same thing at once. But Twitter has recently stopped that. But I've been testing it out, and you can actually, if you wanted to post the one thing, and I've done this with some of your posts for Reach or Miss, you can actually do it with, if you do it the same tweet through Social Oomph on a number of Twitter accounts. It won't. It'll only post one in a 24-hour period.
Yeah.
But by adding a word, or I've been using emojis, when you put it, it doesn't recognize it because it's additional. So it's a manual thing, but it's still a way to use a number of Twitter accounts at the same time.
So that's why you're using so many emojis in your accounts?
Exactly.
Wow, I like them so much. I thought it's so cute. I didn't know there is a real reason for that. So we'll have the links in the show notes because I think people would like to use that as well. I want to ask you, you know, there are many, many factors that actually impact our success, but I believe that there is always one major factor that really makes the difference for each of us. And I want to ask you, what is your key success factor?
Look, Hayat, I think I would say that the most important factor that has affected my success is my unique understanding of the complex workings of the various stakeholders in international trade. That's import-export, if you like. So that whether it's a corporate, whether it's governmental, whether it's multinational or a small business, whether it's a service provider in an international transport like ships and trains, trucks and trains, or freight forwarders or customs brokers. And because of my understanding and my interaction in those areas, I'm better able to share my extensive knowledge and insights in a clear, simple and understandable style. And I think that has led to my success.
It is. I think that's exactly what you told us about the lectures that you gave, the presentations that you gave. It's the ability to talk very clear and simple about
things, isn't it?
So that's what you see as your key success factor, the ability to simplify things.
Yes, definitely.
Wow, I love that. And my final question before asking how people can reach you is my mountain question. As I told you, I always imagine this journey of, you know, taking ownership and building some idea and brand and service in the mind of the customers as climbing a mountain step after step until we are getting to the peak or to success and then climbing another mountain. I love to ask my guests, and I want to ask you, did you ever climb a mountain? I'm talking about a physical mountain, or wished to climb a mountain, or you are planning on climbing a mountain, or do you have any kind of relationships with mountains at all? And I know you do, so I'm waiting for this story.
Yes, Ayad. Look, Sandy and I in 2006 were on a five-week vacation in Britain, and we went on a Swiss European tour. And Sandy, as a young girl, had loved the 1959 film, we're going back a long time, called Third Man on the Mountain. It was about a boy who he attempts to realise his father's dream of climbing an alpine peak known as the Citadel. Well, that was what it was called in the in the film, but it was actually the Matterhorn was where it was filmed. Now, she had always dreamed of that. Now, when she said about going to Britain and doing a Swiss tour, she said, "What do you want to do?" And I said, "Look, darling, whatever you want to do, that will be fine. Just tell me when I have to be at the plane to board it, whatever you arrange, it'll be fine with me." So she arranged this tour and we did some amazing things. But she, part of the thing was the Swiss tour. And so one night we arrived in, it was on a bus tour. It was fantastic. We had a great group of people there. So we arrived in the village of Zermatt, which is near the Matterhorn in Switzerland.
Oh.
And after dinner on this particular night, when we went up to a room, we opened the door and our pokey little balcony was just, you know, it was a little hotel with this little balcony. It wasn't huge, but we got out there and we looked up. It was a corridor of surrounding buildings. But when we looked out and poked our heads around a bit, we could see the glistening summit of the Matterhorn. The snow was glistening it must have been a full moon, I think. And Sandy she was just overwhelmed by this.
Wow.
This is what she wanted to see for so long. Now, it's not a climbing of the mountain or anything, but if you think of the valley that we went through when we lost our house, this was the other end of the spectrum. It was so amazing, and we just had a, you know, it was just one of those magical moments that you have sometimes. It was just amazing. It doesn't seem much possibly to everyone else, but for us in our own, you know, situation, it was just beautiful. So she achieved her dream of visiting us.
It is. Wow, it's so beautiful. Do you think this movie still exists? I mean, is it possible to see that? Or it's...
Yes.
We will look for that. If you have some photos from this vacation of the Matterhorn...
Yes, I'll do that, yeah.
If you can send us some photos, we'll put it on the show notes.
Sure.
And it's a beautiful story and connected everything together from the valley you talked about to the peak of the mountain that you were there. And thank you for sharing that with me and with us.
My pleasure.
And I would like to ask you, what is the best way to connect with you? And I know you are very well connected because you are everywhere and it's beautiful to see, especially on Twitter. What is the best way to connect with you, to everyone that would like to be in touch with you among our listeners?
So the best two ways is probably my main Twitter handle, my own one, is Lance Schooler, and I'll spell that for you.
Sure, please do.
It's at LanceSchooler, as one word. And the same applies on LinkedIn.
That's great. I also would like to invite everyone that would like to hear more about import and export. I'm working with a few entrepreneurs that really have some stuff, some hardware. This is a big issue today. Not everyone is working through Amazon's warehouses, so I do believe there are a lot of questions regarding that.
Yes.
You have your coming course, is that correct? And you have a lot of information about that.
Yes, it's coming up shortly.
That's great. So we'll put the link as well.
Yeah.
Lance, I would like to thank you so much for this interesting and inspiring and exciting conversation and interview. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Hyatt.
Bye-bye.
All the best by now.
And for you, our listeners, until the next time, it all goes down to this. You either reach or miss. Keep reaching your goals and vision. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Reach or Miss Show, the podcast for the customer-focused entrepreneur. You can find all the information, links, and resources that was mentioned at the show in our website, ReachOrMiss.com. See you next week.